Welcome to Inside Sponsorship, the show that provides sponsorship professionals with advice, insights, and news so they can maximize their commercial programs and achieve best practice.
Colin Anstey from Raging Digital is a LinkedIn guru. If you want to know how to use LinkedIn effectively, then Col is your man. And considering how many of us underutilize LinkedIn and considering it's such a powerful tool, I invited Col on the show to discuss how sponsorship and commercial managers can effectively use LinkedIn to connect with potential sponsors and get meetings. It's chock-a-block full of practical advice, so I guarantee you will learn something. Welcome to Inside Sponsorship, Episode 6. I'm Daniel Oyston. And now it's time for our regular catch-up with Mark Thompson, and this time we chatted about the relationship between return on objective and return on investment, and which is most important in retaining sponsors. Mark Thompson, welcome to the show again.
Thank you, Daniel.
A little bit of deja vu because we've already recorded this interview, but somebody accidentally deleted the file.
For the second time.
Do we have a work experience kid?
His name's Daniel. Just same name as you.
Yeah, it's unfortunate for the kid. Okay, so a few weeks ago, you blogged about the IEG ESP sponsorship survey results, and somebody in your network was discussing it with you because they liked the really practical application you discussed in the blog, but they were really struggling to figure out where to actually focus their time. What did you tell them?
I thought it was quite a pertinent question because, you know, you see all these statistics come out and all these, you know, great ideas and theories, but it can be quite confusing how to actually practically apply it. When I was talking to this guy, I basically said, well, first and foremost, your goal should just be sponsor retention. So, and he kind of asked why and it's pretty simple because, you know, we know the facts around, you know, it's 20% cheaper and 20% easier from a time perspective to retain a sponsor than to have to go and find a new one and onboard them, build a new relationship and all that sort of stuff. So, it kind of goes without saying that retention is the backbone to any great campaign and sponsorship program. There's kind of caveats behind that. You know, you sometimes want to churn a sponsor. They might be a pain in the side or you're trying to free up strategically some space to move into a new sort of regime or something like that.
So, but that should be your choice. You should be trying to control that, right?
Exactly right. That's exactly right. You want to be the person that decides whether a sponsor churns or, stays on board, not the other way around. Because if you're being told that they're churning and they're leaving, then, you know, you're on the back foot. And obviously the reasons for that, if it becomes a surprise to you that they're leaving, then, you know, you're not doing your job 100%, you know, to your capabilities. So, you know, you want to be able to drive the boat basically. So also sponsorship retention, there's so many benefits to retaining a sponsor because we talk about, you know, you need to build relationships. You need to sort of draw alignment and programs which sort of augment each other. And that comes with time. So if you're consistently churning sponsors, you know, we see people that have sponsors that sort of change in that category year in, year out, and it's impossible to create some sort of collaborative partnership.
And when we see that, it purely looks and feels like a transaction, not a relationship that works together.
Exactly right. So, you know, the commercial base effect of churning sponsors is also quite impactful because if you're keeping sponsors on board, there's an economies of scale around, you know, branding and artwork and, you know, all of that sort of stuff. So if you're continually having to design new things and work on new relationships and spend time, it's actually just costing you money.
Because it takes so much time, not just the cost. Have you met many sponsorship managers that have a lot of spare time on their hands?
I have not met any that have a lot of spots.
And if you meet one, please capture them so that we can study them and learn their secrets.
Yeah,
but that's an urban myth. Okay, so sponsorship retention is the backbone to a successful program. You just mentioned that. What are some of the keys?
Look, the keys to sponsor retention is the ability, and this comes from the IEG report, and it's pretty clear in that because the sponsors are dictating the answers to this report, but it's the fulfillment, the ROI and the ROO being able to be answered are the keys to retention. But it's the ability to work with a sponsor as a partner which will help them realize their ROO and then in turn their ROI more effectively. So, you know, being organized and efficient helps. You know, fulfillment is a funny thing, right? So if you don't fulfill all your obligations to a sponsor, they're highly unlikely to renew. But if you do fulfill everything to them, they still might not renew, because fulfillment, and this is just delivering everything promised to them in a contract, does not dictate whether or not a sponsor sees value in that partnership. And all it does is showcase that you're good at what you do, and that you're a trusted and a credible organization, and you do what you promise.
And one of the important things there is that the value of that relationship isn't something that happens as soon as they sign on. Sure, they might get some quick wins, but the full value of that relationship takes a year, sometimes years, for them to even realize.
Exactly right. And you've got to build trust and respect. And, you know, the relationship is key, because what the relationship will help you do, and this is where ROO becomes vital, is that if you can understand why they're partnering with you, what their corporate objectives are, and we've spoken about this all the, you know, a lot, you know, the delivering of benefits is just a credibility exercise, and helping them should be helping them achieve their objectives. But the ability to have a relationship with them and be flexible and move with them around when their objectives move, that's going to be key to sponsor retention. Because if you continually help them answer their objectives, and you're a valued commodity to do that, then they're going to stick around.
So ROO and ROI, they're clearly very closely aligned. Let's break down their relationship.
Yep. I mean, you can't achieve ROO without first realizing the return on investment. But the return on objective, so the ROI, sort of informs how the ROI is achieved. So the biggest mistake I see is that people focus wholly on return on investment. You know, we're getting valuation.
And that's just you got your tickets, you got your signage. That's the delivery.
But also the you know, they'll be delivering valuation reports and stuff, which if used correctly are invaluable. And there's some great organisations out there that do that. But if you're just focusing on, we've delivered all our benefits, this is what you paid, this is what it cost, and this is the value of partnering with us, and you think that's just going to result in a retained sponsor, then one day you're going to be, you know, horribly shocked that that doesn't actually impact on retention or not. It's the ability to be able to you know, help them achieve their objectives, which is what's going to decide whether they stay on board or not.
Is it fair to say that the elements that go in to make the return on investment are really just a vehicle that you have to use properly to achieve return on objective?
It is, but there's also, what you need to do is understand the internal mechanics of your partner. So from a brand side, there's different elements within those businesses who want to see different things. So a sponsorship manager will just want to make sure that benefits are delivered.
And we've heard stories of, I won't give too much away here, but large organisations, well-known brands in Australia, are ringing the rights holders that they sponsor once a week, or it might be once a fortnight, and physically going through a list out of the contracts and going, have you delivered this? When are you going to deliver that? And that's the sponsorship manager making sure that they're getting that return on investment.
That's right. And that's the tick and flick exercise. But then, you know, remembering that sponsorship is just, you know, a cog in the marketing wheel. You know, you're going to have other people that want to make sure that that marketing spend is having an impact. So that's also a return on investment side of things. But then, you know, higher up the ladder in an organization, it's all about objectives. Where is our organization heading strategically? Does this partnership help drive that and dictate our future direction of our business? That's the return on objectives. And ultimately, that's where the decision comes from.
So ROO is the underlying factor in retention. How do we achieve it? Surely it's about getting off and starting a partnership on the right foot.
Exactly right. So it's initially established from the outset. So, you know, when you sign up a sponsor, you shouldn't just be signing up saying, how much money have you got to spend? This is what you can buy for your money. It should be, what do you want to achieve by partnering with us? This is what we can help you achieve. Now, how much money do you have to spend to utilize these benefits that can help you achieve your objective? But then having a mutual understanding as time goes on of how their objectives are changing, so that you can be flexible and move with them to keep relevance.
Okay, so that's a really important point. What can we do practically to ensure that we keep an eye on what is and isn't working as the relationship progresses. Because it's not just about setting your ROO and ROI at the start and then acquitting it 3 years later and going, do you want to re-sign?
Yeah, exactly right. So for me, I've just got a list of four for this. So having meaningful relationships is number one. Fulfilling your obligations, whilst we've said that's not going to dictate whether they retain as a sponsor or not, it's actually vital that you fulfill them to keep your credibility. Keeping your eyes and ears open to changing landscape of your partners. So we've spoken about before, doing ongoing research on them even when they're on board, keeping relationships open, speaking to them, knowing where they're heading so that you can move with them, and then being ready to adapt. And that's kind of the new age of sponsorship. We speak to people all the time they sell packages and you're a platinum partner, this is what you get. I kind of feel that, the new age of executive and marketing with the digital space and everything moving so quickly that you've got to be able to drop benefits and add new ones in to help suit a partner.
Those four things, just what was the first one again?
Having meaningful relationships.
Meeting your obligations, keeping your eyes and ears open, and being ready to adapt.
Yep.
Sounds like a marriage.
Yeah, well, kind of.
You've got to put effort into the relationship. You've got to meet your obligations, right? You've got to do what you need to do in the relationship. Exactly. You've got to help with the vacuuming and picking up the kids. You've got to keep your eyes and ears open and be responsive to your partner, and you have to adapt.
Yeah, and in a marriage, obviously, you've got to be able to say sorry even when you don't know why.
But you don't have to ask to re-sign every year or three years.
Well, I know my wife wish she could.
Okay, so let's tie this all together. What's the answer? Should we be focusing most on return on investment to meet return on objective, or the other way around, ROO down to ROI?
The answer is ROO. So it's important because the return on investment leads to the ROO, but you're not going to keep anyone on board if they're not achieving what their corporate objectives are. It's not a donation. It's actually a strategic investment in their own brand, and they're seeing you as a vehicle to help drive that. There are other, avenues to sort of build the chances of retention, and that is, as we've said, relationship and trust and respect. But most importantly, it is, what are you doing as an organization to help this brand drive their brand forward? Basically, we've seen contracts where the list of benefits seem to logically fit together. And we've seen
the complete opposite where you go, I have no idea. You can't reverse engineer it to figure out what the sponsor's trying to achieve, can you?
That's right. Well, I mean, I've heard a story, and I think you might have even told me this story where
I probably made it up.
I've validated this.
Okay.
A sponsor sat down with their rights holder and said, this isn't working for us. You don't actually meet our help us meet our objectives. And the rights holder said, what are your objectives?
Yes, yes.
That one question there answered why they weren't renewing. The rights holder had no idea why that brand was sponsoring them. And, they were a major partner and they left. So therein lies the answer.
Mm. And so if you want to go back over all of that stuff, just go and check out Mark's blog at sponserve.net. If you've got any questions around it, hit up Mark at sponserve.net.
Yep, exactly right. Thanks, mate.
Thank you.
See you next week.
As I mentioned earlier, if you want to know how to use LinkedIn effectively, then Col Anstey from Raging Digital is your man. And so I invited him on the show to discuss how sponsorship and commercial managers can effectively use LinkedIn to connect with potential sponsors and get meetings. The chat with Col could not be more practical, with advice, heaps of advice on how to find people, what to click in LinkedIn, what to write in invites, when to follow up, what not to do, and even response percentages when reaching out and connecting with potential sponsors and trying to get a meeting. And I could give no better intro to Colin than to read his bio straight from his website, which says, I founded Raging Digital to help businesses, executives and marketing professionals build, measure and monetize their digital universe. Dedicated to disruption and addicted to change. I'm pretty dangerous in social media, search, web, email marketing, analytics, content marketing, e-commerce, and CRM. And I'm operating with a million browser windows open. I'm a golfer who loves adventures that end with lower costs, increased sales, and consistently flowing revenue. Die-hard 80s pop music fan, lover of Cherry Ripes. I'm not sure I could add much more to that. Here's Cole. Cole Anstey from Raging Digital, welcome to Inside Sponsorship.
Thank you very much for having me.
Now, Cole, your background is not in sponsorship, but rather marketing, and specifically digital marketing. And that's why I wanted to have you on the show. That's why I asked you on, because we like to try and bring views in from outside the sponsorship and commercial industry. Can you give us a little bit of a potted history of yourself and let us know what it is you do for your clients at Raging Digital?
Sure thing, a potted history. All right. So look, I do a range of things. So I go, I do three core things. So I train clients. So I do a number of things for them in the training space. Number two is I deliver digital marketing for them. And number three, a lot of strategy and audit type things, like looking at where companies are today and where they'd like to be. And we've kind of been throwing around that term digital marketing, but what that kind of comprises of is, you know, website, Google AdWords, search engine optimization, advertising the internet, and definitely social media is a big part of that.
And LinkedIn?
Absolutely. Look, LinkedIn's one of the platforms I've spent a lot of time in, primarily because it delivers results. It actually gives you revenue.
That's good, because that's why I wanted to have you on the show. LinkedIn's a really big player in the digital marketing space. Can you wrap some numbers around it for us?
Yeah, look, I'll focus on Australia for now. So LinkedIn doesn't often release numbers, but some of the core ones they have released is that just over 80% of people in Australia, professionals earning over $100,000, just over 80% of them are on LinkedIn. And just over 67% of them are active, which means they look at it or log in more than three times a week. So that's in Australia. And I think we've got the third best per capita usage by country on the planet. So Australians love LinkedIn.
And those, yeah, those sort of figures would probably hold true across, you know, America, the UK, wouldn't they? Because they're similar economies.
Look, they the Western economies and you know, UK and US, you know, are two of the prime ones of those, definitely pretty similar numbers. Like, there's not much in them. Yeah.
So for our listeners, sponsorship managers and commercial managers in rights holders, so sporting teams, in the arts sector, events, those sorts of things, they would have already done a fair bit of research on the types of businesses that would be suitable for them to partner with, but they need to connect with people. So why do you think LinkedIn can be an effective tool for researching prospective sponsors and the individual contacts?
Yeah, look, I'm a really big fan of SponServe, and the core thing for me and for many marketers or sponsorship managers out there is getting right in to target or sniper the exact prospect you're after.
I like that term, sniper.
Oh, mate, it's got all those connotations, yeah. But look, you know, because you can just market to a broad mass of nameless, faceless people, but LinkedIn really gives you that ability to zone right into that top one human or top 10 humans you're after, not just big masses of 40-year-old professionals, but getting right into knowing who they are. And so number one, LinkedIn is extremely powerful. You know, the way I kind of frame it is all of us, most of us, use Google as our primary way to find websites. LinkedIn is definitely the primary way to find humans.
Yeah, right. That's a good point, one I hadn't thought of. So there's a fair few profiles on LinkedIn that are underdone. What are some of the things we should do in terms of maybe housekeeping and account maintenance before we start using LinkedIn to connect with potential sponsors? Because I'm guessing that most people will have, in this space, will have a LinkedIn profile, but maybe not have used LinkedIn quite that well, and maybe have, you know, not completed this or updated that, but they want, people are going to be looking at their profile when they approach potential sponsors. What do they need to sort out before they get on the front foot?
Look, absolutely. And it's actually the number one step, and it is critical. If you don't have a good profile, people are not going to respond well to what you're asking them. There's 84 elements in a LinkedIn profile.
84?
Yeah, at last count. That's a lot to fill in. But there's only eight that actually matter.
Okay.
So that's probably a better lens to look through. Number one is definitely the photo. People are shallow. People are judgmental. They make snap judgments.
So I should have a photo of me at a party or something like that? Is that what we're talking about?
You probably would. No. Look, the photo is really important. So look, very much exactly as you'd turn up to a prospect meeting. So if you wear a tie, wear a tie. If you wear your glasses, wear your glasses. Smiling, approachable, friendly. Generally just shoulders up to your head. And a mute background, which just means not a busy background. So it can just be a plain white or a plain black or plain green wall, that kind of thing.
But definitely not a selfie that you took at your computer while you were putting your profile together and things like that.
Definitely not. You just will not get the cut through that. All of our user testing says that.
Okay, so number one, profile pic.
Yeah, profile pic number one. Number two is your name. So just, and that's probably quite a simple one for most of you, but just don't add things like MBA or PhD or degrees. It will muck up the search. Number three is actually just below your name, which is something called headline or your title in LinkedIn. You get 120 characters there, and this is the section that carries with you and your profile throughout the whole internet, through Google, through LinkedIn. So make sure it's a really clean, clear statement of your personal brand. So if you're an expert in sponsorship, an expert in marketing, an expert in growing revenue, make sure you add it in there. Look, the next one is definitely connections. So this is probably a little obtuse to say, but the core currency of LinkedIn is connections. Mm. So the average in Australia is 238 connections. You need to be exceeding that for sure, and 500 plus is the magic number.
Because if you want to connect with me and I look at your profile and I see that you've got three connections, but it looks like you've been on LinkedIn for a little while, something feels off, doesn't it? Doesn't feel conducive to me saying, yes, I'd like to be connected with you.
Absolutely. You just lose all trust, all credibility. They know you're not a digital player. You know, it's probably not worth taking this path of LinkedIn if you don't have a really strong, credible, well-connected profile. The next one, number five, is your contact details. So just on your LinkedIn profile, below where it gives your connection numbers, little grey button, contact details. From this point forward, this is your virtual business card. So make sure your current phone number is there. Make sure your current email is there. If you've got a fixed address, make sure you add it for your office. And also you can have up to three websites listed there. So for the company you work for that you run sponsorships in, make sure that's listed. There's almost no reason you would not do that.
Well, I think the opposite. If you reached out to connect to me and I was a potential sponsor and I looked at your profile and I looked at your contact details and you don't put them on there, it feels off. It feels as though, what are you trying to hide if you don't put your phone number and your email on there?
That's right. It's like having a website without your contact details. Like, it's exactly what you want people to do, is to get in contact with you and say, look, we want to sponsor your team, you know?
Number six.
Yeah, number six. There's a section in LinkedIn just called Summary. So it's under a banner of background called Summary. It is the only section in all of LinkedIn that gives you 2,000 characters of whatever you want. Every other category tells you what you have to write. This is the one, and what I definitely recommend to each and every one of you, the best performing way to use this is an open letter to your prospects. So listing their pain points, listing what you can do, listing what your organisation to do. If you'd like to learn more, get in touch with me.
And so for our listeners, it would most likely be something along the lines of, I'm really focused on understanding how a partnership can help achieve your objectives, what investment you would need to help achieve that, build the relationships. That's what.
Perfect. Yeah, absolutely. So that's a great statement. Yeah.
2,000 words, and that's plenty, isn't it, really?
Yeah, or 2,000 characters, which is about four paragraphs. So less than a page. But it is a lot, actually.
And give it a little bit of personality without going too far.
Oh, look, in the back of my mind, I'm always thinking my top 100 prospects are reading this. So just those specific humans, if they're pretty fun-loving, pretty out there kind of people, which I imagine they are, right? Like, this sponsorship's a really fun, great area of marketing, right? I would definitely add personality. You know, this is your personal brand. This is not your company brand now. That's a small part of what you're doing, but if you're, you know, a bit out there, a bit funny, definitely inject that. You're going to stand out from your competitors in doing that.
Yeah, cool. Number seven.
Yeah, number seven is actually just your experience. Like, you make sure you've got your current job. Make sure you've got at least three dot points talking about what your current job is and past jobs. Have your location there, your title, your organization. So many people just don't have it populated, and they approach people when they don't even say they're a sponsorship manager. So make sure it's up to date.
Yeah, right.
And number eight, which is the final one that I would cite as the most important, is actually one just called recommendations. And so about, 15 years ago, you have to get a written reference for a job. You just get your mate to knock it up. No.
I only did that three times.
That's right. Yeah. So, this is where somebody else can write a recommendation for what you've done. So it's not just a one click. It's actually a paragraph or a little bit of information about what it is you do. So these are really valuable, much more valuable than those kind of written references, because I can actually see that a head of sponsorships or a sports team or a credible person's written that reference, a recommendation for me, right?
Well, for the listeners, I would be suggesting that you get sponsors that you've developed a good relationship with and have delivered return on objective and return on investment and have built a long relationship, a great working relationship with, ask them to do it.
100%. They are the ideal ones. Your current sponsors, yeah.
So well done. You did that all off the top of your head. So that validates that you know what you're talking about.
Thank you.
Didn't have to do it off a list, but I've written a list to follow along at home. And so we have number one profile pick. Your name, don't play games with your name and add letters and things like that in. Make sure the headlines are nice and strong. You've got lots of connections. 500 is the magic number. Make sure you've got your contact details in there. There's a good summary with a little bit of personality. You've got your experience filled out, and we have recommendations from people who ideally would be in your target audience, because that validates it when people who are in your target audience that you haven't been doing business with read it. So, okay. How do I get? I've done all that. My profile's ready. I'll follow those eight steps. I'm ready to start looking for potential sponsors to connect with. How do I go about finding them? Where do I start? What's the first step?
Yeah, great question. Look, I've done this in many different ways, forms, lots of different clients. Look, the best way to approach this, number one, is write yourself a little target list. So know that the top 20 companies you want to approach, know their names, know the institutions or organizations, and be really selfish. Get your juiciest list that match really well with your brand or your team or whatever you're working with. So that's probably the hardest bit, to be honest, is knowing exactly who you're after. I would then directly convert that onto LinkedIn. So if I... if you're in front of LinkedIn at the moment, up the top, in the top strip of LinkedIn, just next to the search bar, is a little word that says advanced. If you click on that word, this is a completely free function for all of you out there, no need for a premium profile. If you select advanced, select people, you can actually go and search on a location. So, for example, if you're based in Melbourne, you can select Melbourne and actually type in, I'm after this institution, so I'm after Telstra, for example. So they're a great company you'd like to have. And you can actually type in, under the company banner, just type in the word Telstra and hit search. And you'll get the 21,000 Telstra employees that are on LinkedIn instantly. Then you want to expand that under title, actually write the word sponsorship. If you hit search, you'll get the 22 people in all of Telstra. I'm just talking about this off the top of my head.
Yeah, so it could be sponsorship, commercial, partnership. Yeah.
Perfect. Yeah. So I'd expand that definitely. So you can write sponsorship and then do space OR or and then space again. And all those words Dan just rattled off. So commercial, sponsorship, marketing, all these type terms, and you'll get a really good list. And what I love to do is that it's rarely in an organization, especially with a sponsorship type thing, that it is a single person that makes the decision. So I actually like to map out a full sponsorship team, or I like to see that full marketing team or commercial management team, right? Like I'd be really interested in that. And then you've got this beautiful list for your top target group, which might be Telstra, and you know that full team. And then, we've identified those prospects.
And can I save that search and set it up to get email alerts and things like that?
Absolutely. So top right of your search, there's a in grey font, there's the two words save search. And you can set it up to get notifications. And what that means is when there's a new sponsorship manager or a new marketing manager, you'll actually get an email saying this person's just started. It's probably a pretty good time to approach them and say, welcome to the new job. Here's what's happening.
All right. So I've got a list of identified businesses and people within it, but I'm not connected with them on LinkedIn. What do I do?
Yeah,
look, just send off a let's connect, real quick one.
Yeah, look, you definitely can do that. Not recommended. So what that means is, so if you see that list of 22 perfect people in Telstra based in Melbourne, where you might be based or might be targeting, if you go and just hit connect next to all of them, that will work, right? That will send off a connection request. You can probably expect on average 20%, so 20 out of 100 will accept that. If you actually take the time and right click connect and open it, a little box will pop up. Here's the hottest tip for today for you. If you click we've done business together, drop that down, select your current job, you have 300 characters to write a really nice personal little note to each of those people. And the note should go something a little like this. So I'd say, dear Dan, I noticed you're the director of SponServe. I noticed we're also connected to these three people. I'm a specialist in sponsorship management. I'd like to connect on LinkedIn. Regards, Colin. Something like that, personalised.
And we all know that when we get those personalised messages, we give it way more attention than when just some random we've never heard from, we don't know, just sends us a connection and it just says, hey, I'd like to connect, add you to my professional network on LinkedIn. Sometimes we go, yes, okay, but a lot of the time we go, who the hell is this and why?
Absolutely. Mm. And that's why it's 86% of the time they will check your profile. So that's why that first step, those eight things we wanted to go through the profile, are really important. But in doing this, if you take the time and stand out against your competitors, you're going to boost your rate from about 20 out of 100 up to more like 55 out of 100. Yeah. So you're going to have a much higher hit rate.
Okay, cool. So 55% of people write back and say, yep, we're connected. And they might even write a little message and it might sort of dictate what the next step is. But if they simply just connect and say, thanks for connecting, When should we follow up? When should we progress things? Because clearly we want to have a conversation about whether there might be a good fit in partnering together in a sponsorship.
Yeah, look, absolutely. Look, if someone connects with you and you go straight back to them and message them or contact them or call them or email, it's probably the worst thing you can do. It's a bit like asking a girl to marry you on the first date.
Have you tried that?
Oh, I should just to prove my example. I'd have to get a girl to come on a date with me first.
Yeah, that's right. We'll find one on LinkedIn.
Correct. Great idea. So once you've connected, look, the shortest time that I would ever reach out to start that relationship or progress it further is 2 weeks. Optimal time is actually 6 to 8 weeks. In that 6 to 8 weeks, this is the ideal time and where, Dan, you've got a great amount of experience here, is about posting content. So actually showing that you personally have great experience, great knowledge, you're all over sponsorship. You establish yourself as a leader in that field, and LinkedIn is a beautiful platform for that.
So for example, if you're a sponsorship manager or a commercial manager somewhere, some of those things might be really short, fun, engaging, almost case studies or behind the scenes about how you're helping other sponsors achieve their objectives and get their return on investment, or examples of great sponsorships happening around the world, so that you can demonstrate your expertise, which then builds trust, so that when you go back to people in that, what did you say, 2 but preferably 6 to 8 weeks, they've warmed up to you. They know that you're pretty cluey in this space.
That's right. They've seen your name pop up. They've seen your face pop up. So of the people you're connected with on LinkedIn, they'll see about 30% of your content. You don't know which 30%, but yeah. And so exactly as Dan said, posting about definitely experience with other sponsors, but also trends, changes, statistics, movements in the industry, like show that you know what's happening. Show that you're on top of it.
Yeah, and I think that's an important point, because LinkedIn's not just an address book that you use to just connect with people and get a meeting. The step in between is that you're demonstrating your expertise and actually producing some content that helps position what you do. Okay, so 2 weeks minimum, because the other thing I'd add to that is that if you when you get those connections from people and it looks interesting and you go, yeah, okay, I'll connect with them. And then within the hour, you're getting an email saying, oh, so we'd like to talk to you about website services or cleaning services or whatever. Mm. I don't know about you. It doesn't make me feel very good about the connection. I quite often just go back and delete that connection.
Yeah.
Because they've abused the trust, that little tiny little bit of trust that was there that already built, is yeah. gone.
Absolutely. Like you become the used car salesman if you take that approach, and that's not how you want to position.
And what should we follow up with? What should we say?
Yeah, so look, after you've done that 6 to 8 weeks, so on LinkedIn, so let's say we found 100 of our juiciest prospects, we sent out our connection requests, 55 of them, let's just say that many connected. In 6 to 8 weeks, I would send them, you get a free send a message function at the top of LinkedIn in their profile. They'll get an email and a notification to LinkedIn. And look, this is, you've actually got an open platform to say pretty much whatever you want, but what you should say is this, based on your personal brand and how you'd like to communicate, whether you're a bit more casual or relaxed, but look, something along these lines. So I'd say, dear Dan, we've been connected on LinkedIn for a bit of time now, so I thought I'd get in contact. And I'd talk about myself. So I'd say, look, I manage sponsorships for this group. I work with these sponsors. This is what we currently do. We represent an opportunity for you to do X, Y, and Z. I'd love to hear about your plans for the year, what your plans for launch are, what your plans for your brand awareness are. And I'd say, I'd love to catch up for a coffee Monday or Tuesday next week. So I'd give dates, I'd give times, and I'd probably even give a location. So,
And what sort of response or acceptance can we expect from that?
Yeah, look, on average, so you're looking probably around the 80% response rate.
If you wait long enough before you go and ask for that.
If you do each of these things, and look, I'll just clarify what I mean by response. So it's quite amazing because it's me pretty much personally emailing someone or contacting someone. So, about half of them will say either, thanks but no thanks, I'm not the right person, here is the right person, or I'm going to leave my job soon, don't tell anyone. So you get all, you get all kinds of funny things. The other half will accept and turn up.
Okay.
So that's about the numbers you're looking at for the exact target prospects you're after.
Okay. So how can LinkedIn, and then I think once we're in front of them, our audience is pretty adept at talking to them about what they want to achieve and moving on to the next steps, hopefully a proposal and acceptance. And then we've got a sponsor and we've used LinkedIn effectively as a prospecting tool. But how can LinkedIn integrate with the other elements of our sponsorship mix so when people are actually a sponsor to help not just clearly finding new people to talk to and potentially become sponsors, but augmenting your relationship with the existing sponsors?
Yeah, look, there's a huge range of ways. The two primary ways is keeping your sponsors up to date through posting content about exactly what's happening, about opportunities, about what's happening with the group. It's a great platform to keep them up to date. Number two, which is a very underutilized feature of LinkedIn in this sponsorship space, is LinkedIn Groups, which is a forum or you can either have an open or a closed group. So I would recommend probably a closed group in this situation where each of my sponsors get exclusive access to whatever it is I want to provide them. So if I've got exclusive events, merchandise offers, awareness spots, whatever it might be, LinkedIn is really good for that. And look, probably the third and final one, which is probably an emerging opportunity, is LinkedIn has a really raucous advertising platform, very, very powerful. And so if you do have tickets you want to move or packages you want to move or whatever it is you might offer, LinkedIn has a really good advertising platform and it is the best targeting that I'm aware of across all social media platforms and just about all others, possibly even against Google AdWords.
Particularly in the business-to-business space because you've got job titles, don't you?
Perfect. Exactly what I was going to say. So you can pick off exactly who you're after.
And what about using LinkedIn to, let's say, you sponsor me and the organisation that I work for, and I know that one of your objectives is networking, and I can provide facilitated introductions to people in my network. Would you sit down with a sponsor and show them who you're connected with and say, is there anybody here I can introduce you to help your business?
Yeah, I definitely would. And so, like, I'm relatively agnostic to technology, right? So, you know, I definitely love LinkedIn, but, you know, whatever is going to make your life easier, simpler, faster, more efficient. And so, you know, if I connected with someone on LinkedIn and I built that relationship with them, I went and met them, I knew them, and, you know, possibly became friends with them or whatever, or worked with them, whatever.
Which quite often happens on the sponsorship space. Yeah. People become quite good friends.
Yeah, it's a relatively small industry, right? Like, there's heaps of you out there, right? But not millions, right? So you do get to know these people. Like, I wouldn't always default back to LinkedIn. Like, if I just knew someone, I might literally just text them or call them or email. Like, you just do what you feel is comfortable. But LinkedIn is very useful to say, look, here's everybody I know in Melbourne in the telco space of who you want to talk to. You know, I'll set up introductions for you. Mm. Like, I think that's a really nice add-on.
Yeah. Okay. So we often see company profiles on LinkedIn pushing out content to engage an audience, and we've spoken about content a couple of times. However, there's the common saying that people do business with people. Is it best to promote content as an individual on your individual profile or push it through your company's LinkedIn page?
Yeah, look, great question. I get this a lot. Look, I'm going to answer it just purely based on the numbers, is that very much, to quote The Castle, it's very much the vibe of LinkedIn, is that it is a person-to-person platform. So if you go direct from a person like yourself, or you could be your CEO or your head MD, whoever your head position is, your response rate will probably be close to tenfold that of a company page. So, because you don't really have a relationship with a company, so to speak. You more so just go direct to people. And LinkedIn is moving more and more into the space of paid advertising for companies. And so there's also that factor as well. So, look, I'm a big fan just based on the results of that personal interaction on LinkedIn.
Yeah, right. Mm. Okay, cool. So what are the three most common mistakes you see people making with LinkedIn?
Three most common. Oh, I love that. So, look, number one is just what I call machine gunning, just connecting with anybody or everybody, relevant or irrelevant to you. So it's a little bit needless. Like, I really, quite strong on this, quality is everything. You're better off have 10 of your perfect prospects than 10,000 of your wrong prospects, right? So that's definitely number one. Number two is, look, incomplete profiles, which is quite a broad statement, but look, you know, it needs to be as professional as your company's website and as you dress to go to work and as you deal with your prospects. People do know, they do notice, and they do judge you. So take the time on your profile. And look, number three, and it's probably more of a potentially a quip at LinkedIn, hi to all of you out there, is just the navigation, you know, to find and to do exactly what you want to do. People sometimes do get a bit frustrated with it, and, you know, so one of the third biggest mistake is they kind of just give up or let it go. And so I just recommend just keep at it, play with it, click all the buttons. Like,
well, that's actually a great segue into my next question, which is, what are some of the tools or features that on LinkedIn that a lot of people are unaware of and don't use well?
Yeah, look, the number one feature by far and away is that advanced search feature. So that's, you know, I'd have to mention that as number one. So that is that biggest directory of humans you'll find. Number two, this is a plug for LinkedIn now, is that...
Oh, so you potted them, now you're going to pat them on the back? Okay, cool. Bring them back.
I'm going to get a phone call. Their premium subscriptions, I always say to everyone, use the free one until it limits you. But as soon as you pay for the premium subscription, you can not only access, you know, your first and second degree connections, which might be tens of thousands of people for most people, you can access your first, second, and third degree connections. That's that, 3 degrees of separation, which is getting out into the millions of people. So instantly for that, I think it's $54.99 a month, which you can just bill month on month. Great investment for your business. You just get so much more reach. And most people don't really, there's a heap of features of premium, but that's the one that matters. So that's yeah.
And I think personally, when you see another profile on LinkedIn and it's got the premium user, that tells me that you're actually invested in the platform and that you take it pretty seriously. Great chat, mate. If people want to contact you, find out more about what you do at Raging Digital, where can they find you?
Yeah, look, come to the website, so rageindigital.com. Yeah, come and book an appointment, give me a call, send an email. I'd love to hear from you. Look, you know, love sponsorship. SponServe is a great platform. And LinkedIn is a really powerful tool to get money in the bank.
Mm. Colin Anstey from Raging Digital, thank you so much for taking us inside using LinkedIn to identify potential sponsors.
Absolute pleasure.
I always love catching up and chatting with Cole. It's great. He just has such a great ability to make what can seem like really big and scary things, particularly on the digital marketing front for a lot of people, really, really easy to understand and, better still, easy to implement. Be sure to check out Cole's website, ragingdigital.com, and there are links to all his other social channels in the show notes at sponserve.net. If you aren't already, be sure to subscribe to receive all our content straight to your inbox. Simply head to any of our blogs or our podcasts at sponserve.net and fill in the subscription form, and we will deliver the content directly to your inbox each week. We love listener feedback and hearing from you guys. So just drop me a line and say hi at daniel@sponserve.net. Of course, if you've got 2 minutes and you love the show, then be sure to head to iTunes and leave us a quick review. It makes a huge difference in helping others discover the show and the content, so we would really appreciate it. Until next time, thanks for listening to Inside Sponsorship.
Thanks for listening to the show. For more episodes, blogs, and resources, head to sponserve.net or search for Sponserve on Facebook, Twitter, or LinkedIn.